Chapter 5 The Green Sea. Tiffany flew a few inches above the ground, standing still. Wind rushed around her as the Feagles sped out of the farmyard's top gate and onto the turf of the downs. This is the girl flying. At the moment, there's a toad on her head, holding onto her hair. Pull back, and here is the long green whaleback of the downs. Now she's a pale blue dot against the endless grass, mowed by the sheep to the length of a carpet. But the green sea isn't unbroken. Here and there, humans have been. Last year, Tiffany had spent 3 carrots and an apple on 30 minutes of geology, although she'd been refunded a carrot after explaining to the teacher that geology shouldn't be spelt on his sign as G, Ollie, G. He said that the chalk had been formed underwater millions of years before from tiny seashells. That made sense to Tiffany. Sometimes you found little fossils in the chalk. But the teacher didn't know much about the flint. You found flints, harder than steel, in chalk, the softest of rocks. Sometimes the shepherds chipped the flints, one flint against another, into knives. Not even the best steel knives could take an edge as sharp as flint. And men, in what was called, on the chalk, the olden days, had dug pits for it. They were still there, deep holes in the rolling green, filled with thickets of thorn and brambles. Huge, knobbly flints still turned up in the village gardens, too. Sometimes they were larger than a man's head. They often looked like heads, too. They were so melted and twisted and curved that you could look at a flint and see almost anything. A face, a strange animal, a sea monster. Sometimes the more interesting ones would be put on garden walls for show. The old people called those calkins, which meant chalk children. They'd always seemed odd to Tiffany, as if the stone was striving to become alive. Some flints looked like bits of meat, or bones, or something off a butcher's slab. In the dark, under the sea, it looked as though the chalk had been trying to make the shapes of living creatures. There weren't just chalk pits. Men had been everywhere on the chalk. There were stone circles half fallen down, and burial mounds like green pimples, where, it was said, chieftains of the olden days had been buried with their treasure. No one fancied digging into them to find out. There were odd carvings in the chalk, too, which the shepherds sometimes weeded when they were out on the downs with their flocks and there was not a lot to do. The chalk was only a few inches under the turf. Hoof prints could last a season, but the carvings had lasted for thousands of years. They were pictures of horses and giants, but the strange thing was that you couldn't see them properly from anywhere on the ground. They looked as if they'd been made for viewers in the sky. And then there were the weird places like Old Man's Forge, which was just 4 big flat rocks placed so they made a kind of half-buried hut in the side of a mound. It was only a few feet deep. It didn't look anything special, but if you shouted your name into it, it was several seconds before the echo came back. There were signs of people everywhere. The chalk had been important. Tiffany left the shearing sheds way behind. No one was watching. Sheared sheep took no notice at all of a girl moving without her feet touching the ground. The lowlands dropped away behind her, and now she was properly on the downs. Only the occasional baa of a sheep or scream of a buzzard disturbed a busy silence, made up of bee buzzes and breezes and the sound of a ton of grass growing every minute. On either side of Tiffany, the knack-mack Feagles ran in a spread-out ragged line, staring grimly ahead. They passed some of the mounds without stopping and ran up and down the sides of shallow valleys without a pause. And it was then that Tiffany saw a landmark ahead. It was a small flock of sheep. There were only a few freshly sheared, but there were always a handful of sheep at this place now. Strays would turn up there, and lambs would find their way to it when they'd lost their mothers. This was a magic place. There wasn't much to see now, just the iron wheels sinking into the turf and the pot-bellied stove with its short chimney. On the day Granny Aching died, the men had cut and lifted the turf around the hut and stacked it neatly somewhere away. Then they dug a deep hole in the chalk, 6 feet deep and 6 feet long, lifting out the chalk in great damp blocks. Thunder and lightning had watched them carefully. They didn't whine or bark. They seemed more interested than upset. Granny Aching had been wrapped in a woolen blanket, with a tuft of raw wool pinned to it. That was a special shepherd thing. It was there to tell any gods who might get involved that the person being buried there was a shepherd, and spent a lot of time on the hills, and what with lambing and one thing and another, couldn't always take much time out for religion, there being no churches or temples up there, and therefore it was generally hoped that the gods would understand and look kindly on them. Granny Aching, it had to be said, had never been seen to pray to anyone or anything in her life, and it was agreed by all that even now she wouldn't have any time for a god who didn't understand that lambing came first. The chalk had been put back over her, and Granny Aching, who always said that the hills were in her bones, now had her bones in the hills. Then they burned the hut. That wasn't usual, but her father had said that there wasn't a shepherd anywhere on the chalk who'd use it now. Thunder and lightning wouldn't come when he called, and he knew better than to be angry, so they were left sitting quite contentedly by the glowing embers of the hut. Next day, when the ashes were cold and blowing across the raw chalk, everyone went up onto the downs and with very great care put the turf back, so all that was left to see were the iron wheels on their axles and the pot-bellied stove. At which point, so everyone said, the two sheepdogs had looked up, their ears pricking, and had trotted away over the turf and were never seen again. The Pixies carrying her slowed down gently, and Tiffany flailed her arms as they dropped her onto the grass. The sheep lumbered away slowly, then stopped and turned to watch her. "Why are we stopping? Why are we stopping here? We've got to catch her."
"Got to wait for Hamish, mistress," said Rob Anybody.
"Why, who's Hamish?"
"He might have the knowing of where the Queen went with your wee laddie," said Rob Anybody soothingly. "We canny just rest in, you ken."
A big, bearded feagle raised his hand.
"Point of order, big man. You can just rush in. We always just rush in."
"Aye, big Jan, point well made. But you got to know where you're just going to rush in. You can't just rush in anywhere. It looks bad, having to rush out again straight away."
Tiffany saw that all the feagles were staring intently upwards and paying her no attention at all. Angry and puzzled, she sat down on one of the rusty wheels and looked at the sky. It was better than looking around. There was Granny Aching's grave somewhere around here, although you couldn't find it now, not precisely. The turf had healed. There were a few little clouds above her, and nothing else at all except the distant circling dots of the buzzards. There were always buzzards over the chalk. The shepherds had taken to calling them Granny Aching's chickens, and some of them called clouds like those up there today Granny's little lambs. And Tiffany knew that even her father called the thunder Granny Aching cussin. And it was said that some of the shepherds, if wolves were troublesome in the winter, or a prize you had got lost, would go to the site of the old hut in the hills and leave an ounce of Jolly Sailor tobacco just in case. Tiffany hesitated. Then she shut her eyes. "I want that to be true," she whispered to herself. "I want to know that other people think she hasn't really gone too." She looked under the wide, rusted rim of the wheels and shivered. There was a brightly coloured little packet there. She picked it up. It looked quite fresh, so it had probably been there for only a few days. There was the Jolly Sailor on the front, with his big grin and big yellow rain hat and big beard, with big blue waves crashing behind him. Tiffany had learned about the sea from the Jolly Sailor wrappings. She'd heard it was big and roared. There was a tower in the sea, which was a lighthouse that carried a big light on it at night to stop boats crashing into the rocks. In the pictures, the beam of the lighthouse was a brilliant white. She knew about it so well she dreamed about it, and had woken up with the roar of the sea in her ears. She'd heard one of her uncles say that if you looked at the tobacco label upside down, then part of the hat and the sailor's ear and a bit of his collar made up a picture of a woman with no clothes on. But Tiffany had never been able to make it out, and couldn't see what the point would be in any case. She carefully pulled the label off the packet and sniffed at it. It smelled of Granny. She felt her eyes begin to fill with tears. She'd never cried for Granny Aching before, never. She'd cried for dead lambs and cut fingers and for not getting her own way, but never for Granny. It hadn't seemed right. "And I'm not crying now," she thought,
carefully putting the label in her apron pocket. "Not for Granny being dead." It was the smell. Granny Aching smelled of sheep, turpentine and Jolly Sailor tobacco. The three smells mixed together and became one smell, which was, to Tiffany, the smell of the chalk. It followed Granny Aching like a cloud, and it meant warmth and silence, and a space around which the whole world revolved. A shadow passed overhead. A buzzard was diving down from the sky towards the Nac Mac Feagle. She leapt up and waved her arms. "Run away! Duck! It'll kill you!" They turned and looked at her for a moment as though she'd gone mad. "Dinna fash yoursel', mistress," said Rob Anybody. The bird curved up at the bottom of its dive, and as it climbed again, a dot dropped from it. As it fell, it seemed to grow two wings and started to spin like a sycamore bract, which slowed down the fall somewhat. It was a pixie, still spinning madly when he hit the turf a few feet away where he fell over. He got up, swearing loudly, and fell over again. The swearing continued. "A good landing, Hamish," said Rob Anybody. "The spinning certainly slows you down. You didn't need drill right into the ground this time, hardly at all." Hamish got up more slowly this time and managed to stay upright. He had a pair of goggles over his eyes. "I didn't think I can take much more of this," he said, trying to untie a couple of thin bits of wood from his arms. "I feel like a fairy with the wings on." "How can you survive that?" Tiffany asked. The very small pilot tried to look her up and down, but only managed to look her up and further up. "Who's the wee big job who knows such a lot about aviation?" he said. Rob Anybody coughed. "She's the hag, Hamish. Spawn of Granny Aching." Hamish's expression changed to a look of terror. "I didn't mean to speak out of turn, mistress," he said, backing away. "Of course, a hag'd have the knowing of everything. But 'tis nae as bad as it looks, mistress. I allus make sure I lands on my heed." "Aye, we're very resilient in the heed department," said Rob Anybody. "Have you seen a woman with a small boy?" Tiffany demanded. She hadn't much liked Spawn. Hamish gave Rob Anybody a panicky look, and Rob nodded. "Aye, I did," said Hamish. "On a black hoss, riding up from the lowlands, going hell for—" "We didn't use bad language in front of a hag," Rob Anybody thundered. "Begging your pardon, mistress, she was riding heck for leather," said Hamish, looking more sheepish than the sheep. "But she kenned I was spying on her, and caught up a mist. She's gone to the other side, but I dinna ken where." "'Tis a perilous place, the other side," said Rob Anybody slowly. "Evil things there. A cold place. Not a place to tack a wee babby." It was hot on the downs, but Tiffany felt a chill. "However bad it is," she thought, "I'm going to have to go there. I know it. I don't have a choice." "The other side," she said. "Aye, the magic world," said Rob Anybody. "There's bad things there."
"Monsters?" said Tiffany.
"As bad as you can think of," said Rob Anybody. "Exactly as bad as you can think of."
Tiffany swallowed hard and closed her eyes.
"Worse than Jenny?"
"Worse than the headless horseman," she said.
"Why? They were wee pussycats compared to the scunners over there. 'Tis an ill-fed country that's come a-calling, mistress. 'Tis a land where dreams come true. That's the Queen's world."
"Well, that doesn't sound too—" Tiffany began. Then she remembered some of the dreams she'd had, the ones where you were so glad to wake up.
"We're not talking about nice dreams, are we?" she said.
Rob Anybody shook his head.
"Nay, mistress, the other kind."
"And me with my frying pan and diseases of the sheep," thought Tiffany. And she had a mental picture of Wentworth amongst horrible monsters. They probably wouldn't have any sweeties at all. She sighed. "All right," she said. "How do I get there?"
"Your dinner kent the way," said Rob Anybody.
It wasn't what she'd been expecting. What she had been expecting was more like, "Ach, you canna do that, a wee lass like you, oh dearie us, no." She wasn't so much expecting that as hoping it, in fact. But instead, they were acting as if it were a perfectly reasonable idea.
"No," she said, "I don't dinner any ken at all. I haven't done this before. Please help me."
"That's true, Rob," said a feagle. "She's new to the haggin.
Take her to the kelder." "Not e'en Granny Aching ever went to see the kelder in an e'en cave," snapped Rob Anybody. "It's no a—"
"Quiet," hissed Tiffany. "Can't you hear that?" The feagles looked around.
"Hear what?" said Hamish.
"It's a susurration." It felt as though the turf was trembling. The sky looked as though Tiffany was inside a diamond, and there was the smell of snow. Hamish pulled a pipe out of his waistcoat and blew it. Tiffany couldn't hear anything, but there was a scream from high above.
"I'll let you know what's happening," cried the Pixie, and started to run across the turf. As he ran, he raised his arms over his head.
He was moving fast by then, but the buzzard sped down and across the turf even faster and plucked him neatly into the air. As it beat at the air to rise again, Tiffany saw Hamish climbing up through the feathers. The other Feagles had formed a circle around Tiffany, and this time they'd drawn their swords.
"What's the plan, Rob?" said one of them.
"Okay, lads, this is what we'll do. As soon as we see something, we'll attack it, right?"
This caused a cheer.
"Ach, 'tis a good plan," said Daft Willy.
Snow formed on the ground. It didn't fall, it did the opposite of melting, rising up fast until the Nacmac Feagles were waist-deep, and then up to their necks. Some of the smaller ones began to disappear, and there was a muffled cursing from under the snow. And then the dogs appeared, lumbering towards Tiffany with a nasty purpose. They were big, black and heavily built, with orange eyebrows, and she could hear the growling from here. She plunged her hand into her apron pocket and pulled out the toad. It blinked in the sharp light.
"What's up?"
Tiffany turned him round to face the things.
"What are these?" she said.
"Oh, doke. Grimhounds. Bad. Eyes of fire and teeth of razor blades."
"What should I do about them?"
"Not be here."
"Thank you. You've been very helpful."
Tiffany dropped him back into her pocket and pulled her frying pan out of her sack. It wasn't going to be good enough, she knew that. The black dogs were big and their eyes were flames, and when they opened their mouths to snarl, she could see the light glint on steel. She'd never been afraid of dogs, but these dogs weren't from anywhere outside of a nightmare. There were three of them, but they circled so that no matter how she turned, she could only see two at once. She knew it would be the one behind her that attacked first.
"Tell me something more about them," she said, turning the other way to the circle so that she could watch all three.
"Said to haunt graveyards," said a voice from her apron.
"Why is there snow on the ground?"
"This has become the Queen's land. It's always winter here. When she puts out her power, it comes here too."
But Tiffany could see green some way off, beyond the circle of snow.
Think, think. The Queen's country, a magical place where there really were monsters, anything you could dream of in nightmares. Dogs with eyes of flame and teeth of razors, yes. You didn't get them in the real world. They wouldn't work. They were drooling now, red tongues hanging out, enjoying her fear. And part of Tiffany thought, it's amazing their teeth don't rust. And took charge of her legs. She dived between two of the dogs and ran towards the distant green. There was a growl of triumph behind her, and she heard the crunch of paws on snow. The green didn't seem to be getting nearer. She heard yells from the Pixies and a snarl that turned into a wail, but there was something behind her as she jumped over the last of the snow and rolled on the warm turf. A grimhound leaped after her. She jerked herself away as it snapped, but it was already in trouble. No eyes of fire, no teeth of razors. Not here, not in the real world, on the home turf. It was blind here and blood was already dripping from its mouth. You shouldn't jump with a mouth full of razors. Tiffany almost felt sorry for it as it whined in pain, but the snow was creeping towards her, and she hit the dog with the frying pan. It went down heavily and lay still. There was a fight going on back in the snow. It was flying up like a mist, but she could see two dark shapes in the middle, spinning around and snapping. She banged on the pan and shouted, and a grimhound sprang from the whirling snow and landed in front of her, a feagle hanging from each ear. The snow flowed towards Tiffany. She backed away, watching the advancing, snarling dog. She held the pan like a bat. "Come on," she whispered.
"Jump."
The eyes flamed at her, and then the dog looked down at the snow and vanished. The snow sank into the ground. The light changed. Tiffany and the wee free men were alone on the downs. Feagles were picking themselves up around her.
"Are you fine, mistress?" said Rob Anybody.
"Yes," said Tiffany. "It's easy. If you get them off the snow, they're just dogs."
"We'd better move on. We lost some of the lads."
The excitement drained away.
"You mean they're dead?"
Tiffany whispered. The sun was shining brightly again. The skylarks were back. And people were dead.
"Ach, no," said Rob. We're the ones who did. Did you not know that?